Hey, Amarillo, I'm Jason Boyette, and you're listening to Hey, Amarillo, the interview podcast featuring some of the most interesting people and stories of Amarillo, Texas. This episode of Hey, Amarillo is very proudly supported by StoryBridge, an early childhood literacy program that I believe is doing amazing work in this region. Less than half of the children entering kindergarten in Potter and Randall counties are ready to learn to read because they haven't grown up with books in their homes. This educational deficit at age 5 will negatively affect the child's performance from grades 1 through 12 and beyond. Now, locally, StoryBridge has partnered with the Dolly Parton Imagination Library program to get free age-appropriate books in the hands of children under 5 at no cost to their families. And it's now the largest Imagination Library chapter in Texas. StoryBridge is still, despite that, working to expand this program to reach even more area children, and I think it's so important. To give or to get involved, visit storybridgeama.org and learn more. That's storybridgeama.org. And as part of this podcast partnership with Brick & Nail Magazine, I want to give a podcast shout out to Christina Huseman, an OBGYN with Women's Healthcare Associates. Look for the new May-June issue of Brick & Nail in stores next week. Today's guest is Megan Reed. Megan is the Communications and Public Affairs Manager for Bell Textron's Amarillo Assembly Center. Those are the big white buildings on your way to the airport. At Bell Textron, they produce the V-22 Osprey Bell tilt rotor aircraft, which is used by the U.S. Marine Corps and the Air Force, and you've seen those flying overhead. Megan has been at this job since 2017 and working in the world of government affairs, internal and external communications, and a lot more. And before that, she worked in nonprofit communications. Well, last year, and we started talking about this, Megan and I, way back when this happened. Last year, Bell was awarded a contract that's going to be worth billions of dollars to build a new attack helicopter for the U.S. Army. It's called the V-280 Valor. So Megan and I talk about that contract. We talk about her work for Bell, when Amarillo might see the benefits of this major project, and how Bell is already thinking about developing a skilled local workforce 10 years from now. So here's Megan Reed. Megan Reed, welcome to the Hey Amarillo podcast. Thanks for being here.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm honored to have you. I know that we've been discussing this for, couple of years. When is the right time you to come talk about what you do and some of the stuff happening with your employer? And that's always changing. I want to start with you, though, the same way I start with all my guests, and just ask why you're in Amarillo. So what brought you to this area in the first place?
So I was born and raised in Amarillo. This is my hometown. This is what I know. This is where my family is. This is where all of my friends throughout life, you know, high school, sports, college. I even stayed here to go to West Texas A&M University.
Okay.
You know, as an 18-year-old, that wasn't necessarily the first plan. It was get as far away as possible because you're an adult now. But I played soccer growing up competitively. And at the time, WT was a powerhouse in Division II soccer. And a lot of the girls that I had played club with were already going there. And it made sense to continue my soccer career in college and get to do that close to home.
Where did you go to high school?
I went to Tascosa.
Okay. And is it a pretty common pipeline from the AISD schools in women's soccer, let's say, to WT? I mean, is that something that happens a lot? I know that, you know, the basketball team will have guys playing from Minnesota and places like that, but are there a lot of locals that play?
There are. In fact, quick math in my head, I think there were 6 or 7 girls from my club team that we all graduated the same year from Tascosa or Amarillo High, and we went straight into WT's squad. And I think that, you know, there's a lot of the WT soccer program started by Butch Laufer. Mm-hmm. He also was the one that was very involved in the club that we had all played for. So we grew up really understanding him and his coaching aesthetic and, you know, very close to WT. And it is a natural feeder into WT's.
And you were playing at a time when women's soccer was becoming much more of a big deal because of the U.S. national team.
Absolutely, yes. I want to say, you know, the infamous moment of the World Cup with the jersey coming off.
Yeah, Brandi Chastain.
That's right. That happened my freshman year of high school.
Okay.
And so yes, it was really picking up steam when we started high school.
When you're a good enough player to have college interest and to get to play at that level with soccer, do you ever think there might be some sort of a professional life outside that? Or were you always just thinking, okay, this will be a 4-year experience, I'll do it and then move on to something else?
Yes, I was more on the knowing it wasn't going to go any further. In fact, that's why, you know, when it was really time to start looking at colleges, it wasn't where can I go and play? It was what I'm going to go and study in that I'm going to do the rest of my life. Okay. So, you know, I was planning to go down to Texas State, study criminal justice, do something else besides soccer. I grew up, you know, live, breathe, eat soccer.
Yeah. And sometimes you need a break.
And sometimes you need a break. And so I had made that decision, you know, picked out my dorm room. I was ready to go downstate for the next stage of life. And my high school season ended at Tascosa and my club season ended with the Drifters. And then it was like on a Tuesday night, I was like, well, what do I do with myself? Because normally I'm rushing to get to practice and then I'm on the field for a couple of hours. And then, you know, gone on the weekends traveling right. to Dallas just for regular games because we were a part of the Dallas League. And so that's all I knew. And but even making that quick switch and getting the opportunity to play at the college level, it was still just the mindset of this is what I can do to get me through college.
Right.
And in fact, I didn't play my senior year of WT. And the reasoning is because as a junior, we had won the Lone Star Conference for WT in Division II. And the very same day we were in Oklahoma playing that final game and we won it. And I get back on the bus after pretty much a career high of winning your conference in Division II soccer, the epitome, the peak of your soccer career, at least for me, in my opinion. And I get back on the bus and I have tons of text messages from my sorority. I also was in a sorority at WT. And they were asking me, they were slating the new officers for the next school year. And they had asked me to be president. And that was a moment for me that I was like, you know what? I've had a great soccer career. I'm ending it on a high and I get the opportunity to go and advance myself in something else that also means a lot to me. And so I took that opportunity. Yeah. And so, you know, I got a lot of flack of why wouldn't you play your senior year? You know, you can do both. And my mindset was I did that and now I really want to excel in something else. And I think my time in Chi Omega, I was a Chi Omega. I think my time and getting the opportunity to lead an organization prepared me more for the real world than anything else.
Okay.
I think I still get the discipline. My work aesthetic and the discipline comes from my years of soccer and sports, but I think my ability to lead and run meetings and communicate and delegate and deal with, you know, personnel issues, whatever it is, that really comes from me leaning into my time in sorority. Because playing soccer, I had curfews. I didn't get to go to a lot of the mixers or things that you get to do when you're experiencing Greek life. And so I really got to lean into that senior year in a leadership role. And I wouldn't change anything about that.
Well, a lot of college athletes don't get to go out on their terms anyway. Either you have an injury or you lose in a tournament and all of a sudden it's just, that's your last game. You
Absolutely.
Know, the season's over. You mentioned criminal justice. I know that's not what you do now. So tell me what you were thinking career-wise as you were in college and did that change from the start to the time you graduated?
Yes, definitely changed. That's not new. I think for a lot of college kids, they change majors a lot. But for me, yes, as I had stated, criminal justice. And so I grew up in a family, a military family, where my dad and my two oldest brothers were Marines. And so growing up in a very, you know, disciplined house, being roll called out of bed on Sunday mornings, at the time I was like, why do we do this? But now I'm very thankful to have that instilled in me.
Okay. You do it now with your own family?
Not yet. Okay. They're still little, but it's coming. And my dad was also a police officer here in Amarillo and had a very extensive career here in Amarillo, narcotics team, bomb team, SWAT team, undercover. I mean, he was a superhero. And not that I wanted to be necessarily on patrol or anything, but I just grew up around that. Mm-hmm. And I was one of those kids growing up that I didn't know what I wanted to do. I was so envious of, you know, the fifth graders in my class that just knew and had known since day one, they're going to grow up to be a doctor. They're right. going to grow up and do this. And I, you know, went back and forth all the time. I didn't know what I wanted to do. I wanted to do something. I wanted to represent something and be important. And I just didn't know what that was, what career path that was. And so criminal justice, I think, was a little bit closer to me of, I'm not necessarily going to go and serve my country, but something that deals with discipline and rule following and something to that aesthetic. And also the time that I was growing up in, I think every station had some sort of a CSI.
Oh, yeah.
And so.
Well, and still today. And still that's today. True, so.
And so, you know, just watching those shows on, you know, daytime television and primetime and all this stuff. And it's, you know, they're in slow motion and they're hitting these one-liners and like, it's just really, it's really cool mystery stuff. So that's sort of what led me into it, to begin with. And then quickly after talking to one of my sorority sisters on the kinds of classes she was taking and, in school, I was like, that sounds amazing. And that sounds more like what I've wanted to do. I just didn't know it was under the umbrella of mass communications or advertising and public relations. And I think there's a lot of things, and I see this today in what I get to do for my current employer in trying to develop and grow our future workforce for this specific industry is, you know, as a teenager, it's not, the path isn't clear.
Yeah.
It is not clear, even though it might be clearer nowadays than it was, you know, when I was a teenager. But, you know, I knew I wanted to do these things. I just didn't know what the degree plan was. Okay. I didn't know what it was called, the profession. And I wish I had a little more help in guiding me that way of you want to do X, Y, and Z. That means you need to be in this college, right. Here's not your that path. College. And so it took me a while to get there, but eventually switched over to the mass communications department with an emphasis in advertising and public relations. Okay.
Did you know what you wanted that to look like as a career? I mean, it's pretty broad.
Right.
Mass communications can be a lot of different things.
Yes.
Did you intend to like get into the advertising world or find your way into a marketing position?
I did. Yeah, I really liked, you know, publication, magazine. I liked laying things out, design. Mm-hmm. I didn't necessarily like the writing portion. I'm not a strong writer, but I liked the layout and the painting a picture and representing something and collaborating and connecting. So I loved all of those things. I knew for sure it's not broadcast. I don't want to do broadcast. I'm not going to be a weather girl. I'm not, you know, a straight up journalist. I don't feel strong in writing, but it was still that era of entertainment and graphics and putting beautiful pieces out there that communicate in some way.
What did your career look like after you graduated?
When I was at WT, a Chi Omega, we're nationally partnered with the Make-A-Wish Foundation. And so as a Chi O, we would do fundraisers every year to raise money for kids here in the Texas mm-hmm. Panhandle that needed a wish. And so that's how I was introduced into Make-A-Wish specifically. And as a senior, most seniors in degree plans have to have some sort of an internship. And so it dawned on me that when I was a senior and we were granting the wish to a little kid here in Amarillo after the golf tournament that we had done to raise money, we had the news show up and it just dawned on me, oh, you can still work for a nonprofit and still do something as far as storytelling, communicating, connecting, collaborating. And so I asked the executive director at the time, do you guys have internships? And she said yes. And so I did an internship with the Make-A-Wish Foundation here in Amarillo while I was still a WT student.
Okay.
And I graduated May of 2009. And so if you remember back to what was happening in just
tough time
the world,
to enter the job market.
To enter the job market, especially, you know, communications, advertising, I think big ad agencies were getting cut from major budgets. Mm-hmm. It was just a difficult time. And so I was fortunate enough that Make-A-Wish asked me to come on full time to do both communications and development work, raising money. I was very excited about the communication side of it. I wasn't necessarily excited about the raising funds, but it's hand in hand. And so I had the opportunity to at least have a full-time job in something similar to what I went to school for right out of college. And I didn't really expect to stay with them as long as I did, but I ended up working there for 7 years.
Okay.
And had the opportunity pretty soon after college and starting my full-time role that the Make-A-Wish chapter here in Amarillo, it was really just over Amarillo and Lubbock area, so really the Texas Panhandle, and they had merged with the chapter out of the DFW area.
Right.
And so now it's Make-A-Wish North Texas. And at the time, they were covering 2/3 of the state of Texas, 7 different offices. And they had asked me to be the communications manager over the entire chapter.
Okay.
And that was great because it was sliding more into the communications and marketing realm as opposed to the development side because they had a full development staff team. So it was great. And I moved to the DFW area for a little while to work out of the headquarter office down there. And like I said, working with 7 different offices throughout Texas, technically 11 different media markets as a team of one, mm-hmm. supporting the development team and the program team on telling these great wish stories, talking about the fundraising events, you know, from black tie events all the way down to car shows and bass fishing tournaments and everything that we do here in Texas to have fun and raise money. And so it was a fantastic experience to be able to wear all the different hats.
Mm-hmm.
It's a double-edged sword to be a team of one. You get to do everything, but then you have to do everything. And so I think that although it was frustrating to not have resources like I thought I was going to have coming out of college, I thought I was going to work for these big advertising agencies that have unlimited budgets to do all of these, you know, Super Bowl ads and things. No, I was working for a nonprofit that had zero budget in that realm and I had to be creative, but I had to learn it all. And so I think that really was the foundation to, as I continued through my career and what I've gotten to do since Make-A-Wish.
Was it tough to move away after having been here for so long?
It was definitely tough to move away. It was difficult. You know, this is my home. I think at the time it was an easier decision because, you know, I was young. I was not married. I did not have kids. It was easier to, you know, cut the strings and mm-hmm. go. Also knowing that it's still Texas, I think it would be hard. Even if I was closer but crossed state lines, I think it would be just mentally hard. But it was the Dallas area, so it wasn't that far away from family, and I felt supported. And I knew actually a lot of the people down in that office, and so it was a welcoming family during that transition of picking up and moving for your first real job.
Okay. Tell me then how that job came to a close and you ended up where you are now.
My husband now, we actually moved back to Amarillo because we got engaged when we lived in the DFW area. And he also grew up here in the Texas Panhandle. And when we decided we're taking the next step, we're getting mm-hmm. engaged, we're going to get married, we wanted to be back home.
Okay.
And he got a great job opportunity back here. And so that was a great, great way to move back. And I thought at the time that meant my time with Make-A-Wish was over, because when I took that communications role, they said I had to go down to the headquarter office. And so I knew moving back, this was it. And so when I talked to them about moving, they were like, no, you can just work out of the Amarillo office. You'll be fine. So I guess I had proved myself enough in my work ethic that I could do it from anywhere, and I was still going to be at one of the regional offices with travel. So that was very nice that I was fortunate enough to get to transition back but still do the same work and live here in Amarillo. And when we got married, you know, we bought our first house, we were looking to start our family. I was working nonprofit. My husband was thinking about starting his own business. And so when we were, you know, doing the financial budget of new family, new home, wanting to start a family, right, knowing that you don't start a business and become profitable automatically,
yeah,
and living off of a salary, let alone a nonprofit salary, maybe wasn't the best idea. But I still was like, we'll make it work, because I loved my job at Make-A-Wish. I really loved it. And an opportunity came up at Pantex here in Amarillo to join their communications and public affairs office. And my husband kept asking me, why don't you apply? Why don't you apply? And, you know, I think a lot of us, and especially women, think about all the reasons why they shouldn't do it or why they're not qualified enough to do it. And so I just kind of kept pushing it off. No, I'm happy. We're fine. And I put in my resume eventually, really to get my husband off my back of, yes, I submitted it. It's in. And so I submitted it. It was probably 7 or 8 months later.
Wow.
Before I got a call back of, hey, are you interested in this role? And I'm like, well, of course I'm interested. I, you know, growing up in this area, everybody's interested in what we're doing to support our country out there. And so I, you know, went through the process of interviewing and talking about it. Still at the time, still at the interview, sitting at the table thinking, like, no, I'm still good. Like, I still love Make-A-Wish, but I'm just so curious. Like, keep telling me more, keep telling me more. And I would tell them more. And I ended up getting the job. And so I transitioned out to Pantex to work in their communications and public affairs office. And the role specifically was community outreach. And okay, so really dealing with not only the giving and volunteerism, but really anything that falls under a company's community outreach. And so working for a nonprofit and seeing, you know, all of our development officers and board and everybody trying to find that one person at these big companies that is the foot into asking for support.
Right.
Now I got to be on the other side of that.
You're the big company.
I got to be the big company and the representative of, call me, you know, let's talk about what your need is. Let's talk about the need of the community. And so that was really exciting to take on that role and to do that.
I think people, listeners, might laugh at the idea of community outreach with Pantex, right, because everything we know about Pantex is like, yeah, we can't really talk about that.
Right.
You know, the outreach is so fenced,
yes,
in. But, you know, if you think about it, if you pay attention, like, Pantex is sponsoring a lot of, mm-hmm, events. They're involved in a lot of things. They're giving in a lot of different directions.
Yes.
And so it does make sense in that regard. How long did you work there at Pantex?
So I was only there for 14 months. Okay. And I did not anticipate it being that short. But this opportunity came up of where I'm at now at Bell. And again, I thought of every reason why, no, I just got to Pantex. I need to get settled in my role, this and that. I don't need to apply. But again, my husband, bless him, he was like, no, just put in your resume and let's just see what happens. And same thing, went into the interview process, sitting at the table thinking, I'm good. I have a job, but I'm just curious what you guys are, mm-hmm, going to do. And again, had the opportunity to take this role, and it has been the best decision. Going back to the Pantex side of it, you know, I was very siloed in this one specific role of community outreach. Mm-hmm. And like you said, you know, you don't, coming from a background of marketing and communications and telling a story and branding, I didn't get to do a lot of that at Pantex. And so although I was doing something really great, I was now a part of a huge team,
right,
and they had a lot of support doing all these different things, and I didn't have to do that. And it was just done differently because you're working for one customer, and that's the government. And so there was definitely something I was missing with the role that I had at Pantex. And so coming into Bell's side of it, yes, still a government contractor, but completely different in some of the freedoms and how we just market, advertise, and public affairs and government affairs as a whole, even though we do still work on military programs.
Okay. Tell me what that looks like then to be in marketing and communications for a large defense contractor like Bell. You know, it's not the kind of business where, you know, you're making magazine ads, you know, you're not going to find your clientele on the TV news, you know,
right,
doing that sort of stuff because it's such big companies,
right,
it's the U.S. government. What is the goal of what you do? Why is that sort of position necessary? You mentioned workforce earlier, that there's a lot of trying to find an employee base.
Right.
Is that a lot of it?
It is. So again, going back to when I said for, you know, Make-A-Wish, I was kind of a team of one. I was doing a lot of different things. That is sort of my same role here in Amarillo. Although I'm a part of Bell's global communications team, I am the only communications team member here at Amarillo. Okay. So I'm not just dealing with our internal communications, employee communications, or local media asks. I'm dealing with corporate giving and volunteerism. I'm dealing with our local partnerships, you know, really making sure they're nurtured, the AEDC, the chamber, the mayor, the city council, all of those local connections that mean a lot to Bell and are the reason that Bell's here back in Amarillo. Just that public affairs side of it is really where a lot of my time is spent, that relationship base. Making sure that we have the resources that we need to continue executing business here in Amarillo.
Tell me the current status of what's happening at Bell that you can talk about. I mean, I know there probably are some things that you don't get to reveal, but I think for a lot of local people, you know, Bell is just those big white buildings on the way to the airport. Sometimes we see an Osprey, you know, a tilt rotor aircraft landing or flying overhead, but we don't know a lot about what's happening, what's being built. What are some of the things that are happening here in Amarillo that maybe we should know about and don't know?
Right. Yeah, same. I mean, as I told you before, I grew up born and raised here in Amarillo, and the first time I'd ever stepped foot out in those facilities was for interviewing for this role. And I always joke that it's one of the best kept secrets in Amarillo because you know, we are a secured facility. It's not that you can just call and get a tour. It's really business essential only as far as getting behind the gates and seeing what we do. So I will say that Bell this year is celebrating 25 years of the Amarillo Assembly Center, which is out there located by the airport. And that's, and we say we're back in Amarillo. And the reason for that is Bell had a presence here in the Amarillo area back in, you know, the 60s, 70s, 80s with doing some repair and overhaul work for aircraft. They were brought back here to Amarillo. They were repaired, overhauled, and then they were sent back out to for the need at the time. And then there wasn't that need anymore to do repair and overhaul with just what was going on in the world. And so Bell was not here. And then, you know, a few years down the road, Bell wins the contract for the Bell Boeing Osprey. And they started shopping, really, they started shopping all around the nation. Where are we going to build this factory that's going to start producing these V-22 Ospreys? And it was pretty quickly at the time, I think Kay Bailey Hutchinson said, we're doing this in Texas. Yeah. The search was brought back to Texas, and Amarillo was a part of a lot of cities throughout Texas that were vying for Bell setting up shop to build these Ospreys. And you know, long story short, Amarillo won because of still the same way we do business is we all sit around the table, we bring our connections and our partnerships, and we want to make it work. One of our, we have a video from our 20th anniversary that one of our former executive vice presidents tells the story of. He was one of those that got to sit in the room when they were shopping around cities. And he said, you know, they stepped off the plane in Amarillo and they walked into a room that was standing room only. And you had chamber and elected officials and energy company and the community college president. And like anybody that probably had a stake in this was in that room. And the discussion was just, you know, we will do whatever it takes to bring Bell back here because we know the impact it'll make to Amarillo. And that's still, I know the way that we do business for our economic development and what they're doing is we approach it as we might not have as many trees here, but we have a lot of great resources in this area to offer. And so that's how Bell came back to Amarillo 25 years ago is because of that really community partnership of working that deal and bringing it back. And so we've been here for 25 years now, specific to the Osprey, the tilt rotor that you talked about. Since then, we've built other military platforms as well, but of course we're most known for the Osprey. Here in Amarillo. And so really up until recently, we have been the military final assembly and flight operations for all of Bell's military programs. All of the commercial platforms are built in Canada.
Okay.
At a different assembly site. So those are the two main assembly sites for Bell, one military and one commercial. But a few years ago, there's a new commercial platform that will actually be built here in Amarillo by our workforce. And so we really just call it the Aircraft Assembly Center now instead of military aircraft. Although military is still the main work and our main purpose, I think the talent that our workforce has here is the reason why it made sense for Bell to put that commercial platform here for delivery out of Amarillo. So we're excited for that difference in our work scope. And so moving a little more recently, last year it was announced that Bell was the winner for the new contract for the Army. They're right. Looking and have been working for almost a decade now of how they're going to modernize the future Army and a bunch of different aspects, not necessarily just aviation, but, you know, ground vehicles and everything that the Army needs to secure our freedoms. And so, of course, aviation is one piece of that. And, you know, so they've been talking for years and years, what's next after some of the current platforms that they operate right now. And so Bell has been working on this contract for years and years and years. And we got the news that we won it last year. And so that's so exciting for Amarillo specifically because of the amount of work and economic impact that will eventually bring to Amarillo. It's not something overnight. Just because you won the award doesn't mean the next day you see.
Okay, here are all these billions of dollars that are promised.
Yeah, so there's lots of work in preparing our business for what the future program is. And to put it into some perspective of, you know, we've been building these V-22 Ospreys mm-hmm. for decades now. And this new platform, this new generation of tilt rotor we call it a generational program because although we won't hit full rate production until 2030 timeframe, we will continue to build those aircraft hopefully for decades to come as the Army continues to modernize and change the way that they secure our freedoms and do their missions across the world. That is, it's a generational program. So, you know, kids that are in middle school right now can continue through middle school, finish out high school, either go and start at Bell at 18 or go on to get their engineering degree and come back, start at Bell, finish at Bell on a long career just on this one program. And so although we can't put numbers to it now, right. There's things that are still being figured out. It is just very impactful for our current workforce, and it is very imperative that we build that future workforce here.
Yeah, that's one of the things that was so fascinating because we had first started talking about you being on the podcast when that had not yet been announced. And you're like, well, hold on a second, because there's some things in the works. Let's wait and see what happens. But one of the things you said to me soon after that was that all of a sudden it makes you start looking at, okay, the 12 and 13 year olds right now mm-hmm. in Amarillo schools are the young men and women who are going to be assembling this thing 10 years from now. And right. so all of a sudden your focus turns toward, okay, we've got to get the Bell brand. We've got to get awareness into the schools so that when those kids are ready, they're in place to help you fulfill this contract. I wonder what it's like to always be thinking long-term about these kinds of things, you know, 10 or 15 years in the future. Maybe not even just you from a communications side, but like I'm sure Bell is thinking, all right, what kind of facilities will we have mm-hmm. to build? What kind of space do we need? How do we retrofit what we have now to change production? Like, tell me what that's like.
Yeah. You know, I am so appreciative of the leadership that we have at Bell, and not just here in Amarillo, but as we look up into our executive leaders at the top level of Bell, is they are all so forward thinking, and they have to be. They have to be when you think about what it takes to win government contracts and what it takes to ready a global workforce for work of this size. And you're right, we've had plans for years and continue to have multiple plans of facilities and footprint, and not just here in Texas, but we have suppliers and partners all over the country and all over the globe. And so readying those partners of, even though we might not deliver the first aircraft until later in 2030, well, our suppliers are already thinking about what facilities they need so they can get us the part in time.
Because how many thousands of electronic components are you putting together, you know, when it's being assembled? It's not all happening in Amarillo.
Right. And it's, you know, sort of all roads lead to Amarillo is we buy parts from suppliers. We have centers of excellence down in the Fort Worth area that's building the gearboxes and the rotor blades and the things that are internal to Bell, and all of that is shipped up here to Amarillo for that final assembly piece. And so just, again, the relationships of not only our internal Bell locations, but our supplier locations. And then what does that look like from a government and public affairs standpoint of, you know, Texas is working with all of these other states that are also that tilt rotor industrial base.
Yeah.
It's way bigger than just Amarillo.
Maybe you can speak to this about the reputation that Amarillo has within that larger military community. Like, do soldiers climb into a tilt rotor and do they know that that's coming out of Amarillo? Like, is that sort of awareness kind of baked into use of those products?
I think yes and no. I think that there's a lot of them that we meet that didn't know Amarillo was where they were built, but then there's some that knew. So I think that what we've done on the new tilt rotor program and the marketing that we were able to do in vying for winning that program really brought Bell back to the forefront of new technology, where Bell's footprint is. But there's still lots of communication I think we need to do, that this is Amarillo is Rotor City, USA, and will for sure be in the future. I know you said earlier that we occasionally see Ospreys flying, and we do occasionally. And when you think of...
Or feel them.
I mean, you definitely feel them. Yes. And, you know, I think it's just more to come in the future. We will have more tilt rotors in the sky here in Amarillo. And I think it'll start to have more of a groundswell. I don't think that, at least here in Amarillo, we've done a good job talking about ourselves, at least in the time that I've been with Bell. And that's really just because we haven't been in a hiring ramp. We haven't been in this expansion ramp on a big new platform. But that's, you know, 10 years from now, that'll look different too.
To close this out, tell me why Amarillo is such a good place for that work. Like, why does this city work as the final place for assembly or for testing or for workforce? Like, beyond the welcome, you know, that the executives got when they were first looking at Amarillo, what are some of the other intangibles that maybe make this a good place to be located?
I think it really goes back to community. I think that it's the right partnerships in the right place at the right time. I think that, you know, the fact that we are co-located at the airport and we have the access to the runway and we have the dense population of the Texas Panhandle when we do our flight testing, I think that all of that went into the factor of Bell's position here. I think when you talk transportation, right, we've got I-40, we've got rail, we've got things that make the roads to Amarillo easier for our customers, our suppliers, our own internal base. And again, it goes back to the people and the community. I know that the way that we do public affairs here in Amarillo is sort of the model in how we do that as we grow into other communities around the country with Bell locations, of the way that Amarillo works with us on whatever it is that we need, whether it's new facilities or, gosh, even changing our logo a few years ago, just all the back end stuff you have to do to put a new sign up on the side of your building. There's a lot of back end paperwork that people don't know. You can't just change out your logo and if it's backlit and all these things. It was so easy to work with Amarillo as opposed to maybe some other communities that we live in that, you know, just question, well, why do you need a new logo? And I don't think y'all can do that. Well, Amarillo's like, yep, do it.
Yeah.
And I think that's just a small snippet of why we love being here, is because I think that the Amarillo community is our biggest cheerleader for us. And it's because they support what we do and they're willing to help us continue to execute, because I think we all know the importance of protecting our freedoms and our work in that.
Today's episode is supported by Pinnacle by Rockrose, a new master-planned neighborhood being developed at Hollywood and Bell, just south of Randall High School. The 2024 Parade of Homes is underway. It started this past weekend, and it will continue this weekend, May 2nd through the 5th. Three Pinnacle homes are on display at this event, and all of these homes are on Stonecrest Drive, which means you can literally walk from one to the next. They're right next to each other. All of them are four bedrooms. One is by Cornerstone Fine Homes, one is by Johnston Homes, and the third one is by Connolly Construction. They're beautiful homes. I encourage you to go look at them. Parade of Homes tickets are $10 for ages 12 and up. You can get them at Pack-A-Sack, United Supermarkets, or the Parade Smart app on your iOS or Android device. To learn more, visit pinnaclebyrockrose.com or amarilloparadeofhomes.com. Hey Amarillo is also supported this week by Jimmy John's Gourmet Sandwiches. Jimmy John's has three locations in Amarillo. Two are along I-40 and one is downtown near the ballpark. And these franchise locations are owned and operated by an Amarillo resident. And he wants you to know that Jimmy John's has just rolled out a new Caprese Salami Pesto sandwich and a lemon berry cobbler cookie. I haven't tried either of those. I've seen the photos though, and they look really, really good. I'm all over a Caprese sandwich of any sort. These are only available for a limited time at Jimmy John's, so grab one while you can. Thanks to the locally owned Jimmy John's locations for sponsoring the show. Okay, I'm back with Megan Reed of Bell Helicopter. Mm-hmm. Is that right?
Bell Textron.
Is that the easiest way? Bell Textron.
Yeah, Bell Textron. Okay. We removed helicopter from our name a few years ago because we're more than just helicopters. We're really moving into that vertical lift.
Got it. Either way, this is part of the show I call Eight Straight. Straight is sponsored every week by Panhandle Plains Historical Museum in Canyon. It's the largest history museum in Texas, and its extensive windmill collection includes multiple versions of this indispensable technology, which I know has a lot to do with vertical lift, as well as, you know, pulling water out of the ground.
Yep.
But windmills made life possible here in the Texas Panhandle. So you can see those at the museum or learn more at panhandleplains.org. Okay, I know that this will apply to you. When you think of Amarillo 10 years from now, what do you hope for? Besides a robust workforce.
Right. That is one thing that comes to mind, is I'd love to see, you know, a robust workforce, a huge industrial park out there across the street from us by the airport because of the business at Bell and what we're doing and what that's going to do to the economy. So that's one. But I think my real answer is more quality of life stuff. Mm-hmm. I think, again, talking about workforce, and no matter what you're doing here, is attracting more people to Amarillo. And growing up here in Amarillo, I take it offensively when people are like, why would anybody want to live there? And I'm like, give me 5 minutes and I'll tell you. Yeah. And I'll make you a believer. We don't have a lot of trees and we have lots of wind, but there is so much more to Amarillo. And I think we need some more of those quality of life venues like the ballpark and, you know, a thriving downtown and outdoor recreation and things like that, because that's what really attracts the talent to think twice and come here, but then also keeps them here too.
You mentioned the wind. Does that factor into this being a place where the tilt rotors are tested and fly? Like, is there some idea that if they can handle panhandle wind, they can fly anywhere? Does that play into it?
I'm sure it plays into it a little bit. I know that there's probably a lot of flight restrictions we have when we do flight tests mm-hmm. on production aircraft of, you know, if the wind's too high or at a certain speed, we're probably not going to pull it out of the hangar. But I think there's lots of elements that we can get in this area all in 1 week sometimes.
Yeah, a lot of variables.
Yes, lots of variables. And so I'm sure there's some sort of factor that plays in there.
All right. Other than wind, what does this area have too much of?
You know, I hate to say this because I feel like I hear this a lot from people, is we don't need more truck stops. But I understand that a lot of our industry is counting on the trucks and moving things, you know, coast to coast. We are a huge piece in that. I think it's the Economic Development Corporation that says Amarillo is in the middle of everything.
Right.
And we really are. And so that's You already said wind, but we could do without as much wind. Although on the days when the wind doesn't blow, I'm like, I can't breathe.
So, it feels so stifling.
Yeah, yes.
What does this area not have enough of?
Rain.
Yeah.
We could definitely use some more rain. I think with the cycle of life that I'm in right now, I have two young kids and, you know, they're into all of the Kids Inc. stuff and all of the club stuff, getting them started out in every type of sport. I think what we need more of is sports and recreation facilities, mm-hmm. and not just for the actual games, but the practice facilities.
Right.
It's really hard in Amarillo to find a place to practice. For whatever sport it is, but specifically when it's outdoor sports in the spring, I don't know why anybody plays a sport in the spring in Amarillo. It's just miserable with the wind or the allergies or the dust or whatever snow sometimes that comes with it. So that's been hard. And that's just the season of life I'm in right now. Yeah. Is I want my kids to try every sport. And it's sometimes hard to organize that when you can't find practice facilities.
And that's one of those things when the city has talked about a sports complex, or when the, you know, Kids Inc. announced their mm-hmm. new sports complex. Some people are like, oh, why do we need that?
Right.
But if you have children who are participating in that, like, you know immediately
right.
why that need is so important and how helpful it would be to have something like that.
Yes.
It's all just based on your perspective and experience in it.
Right. Absolutely.
Okay. What's your favorite local nonprofit? You mentioned Make-A-Wish. You don't have
yes.
to talk about them if you don't want
yes.
to, but you still can.
So I have lots of favorites. Yes. I will always be a life lover of the Make-A-Wish Foundation. I also had the honor of serving on the United Way of Amarillo Canyon board for the past couple of years. What they're doing for the community is fantastic and very much needed. But my answer today will be a snack pack for kids
okay.
of Amarillo. Dyron is, I got to meet him doing Leadership Amarillo and Canyon, and just, I appreciate that man and what he does and his vision. And I think what I love about it most, and what my husband and my entire family loves about it, is the way that he utilizes the volunteer, and it's very structured and it's very organized, and you know what to do right when you get there, and you know what your job is and when you can leave when your job is done, rather than there's a lot of times that is, you know, volunteer organizations, we ask for all this help and then the help comes and we're like, well, we don't know what to do with you.
Yeah.
So you end up standing there for your hour of volunteering, not necessarily knowing how to help. And I think that's what, on top of his entire mission of what he's doing with Snack Pack for Kids, but just the way he runs that organization is very fantastic.
Okay. What's your favorite local restaurant or food truck?
So I love all food. My husband and I love spicy food a lot. And so I will say that my answer today is it's a Punjabi affair.
Okay.
Indian food. They are fantastic. Their flavors are amazing. If you have not tried Indian food, try it there.
Yeah.
It's so flavorful. We love
yeah.
it. Our kids love it, and our kids are picky eaters, and our kids love it.
Good. That's good yeah. to know. What's the most underrated thing about Amarillo?
I will say, I get this a lot when we're dealing with, you know, customers and people that are coming in to Bell or just coming through Amarillo, is the Big Texan always comes up,
mm-hmm.
right? Because we're known for the Big Texan. I think that the Big Texan is underrated more so by the people that live here.
Okay.
You know, a lot of any tourist attractions, right? The locals don't usually go to tourist attractions, but I think the Big Texan, just their model of marketing and their fried jalapenos and the beer that they brew is fantastic. And it is an experience. It's not only the food, but it's an entire experience. And I think that's so at least underappreciated and underrated for Amarilloans.
Okay. I appreciate that. I think that's an interesting perspective.
Yeah.
A lot of people hear about it and they're just like, oh yeah, it's a tourist trap.
Yeah.
Not realizing how well it does the tourist trap thing,
yes.
but that there's a lot to offer besides that.
And absolutely.
I think that's interesting.
Yes.
Okay. What's your favorite neighborhood in Amarillo?
I will say my favorite neighborhood is the Wolfland area. And that is because, well, lots of reasons. One, they have trees, which we don't get a lot of here in Amarillo, but just the history of it, the brick streets. And that is the neighborhood that my husband and I bought our first house in,
okay.
that we remodeled ourselves. And it's close to home. Growing up in Amarillo, I just knew that I loved the neighborhood, and it's such unique homes. It's mm-hmm. not cookie cutters nowhere close to cookie cutter. Right. They're very unique in the history and the trees. I love it.
Okay. When was the last time you visited Cadillac Ranch?
A couple of years ago when I was supporting the Amarillo American Advertising Federation, we hosted a central region conference for advertisers and marketers across multiple states. They came here and we hosted a conference, and that was a part of some of the stuff we offered to those people is get to know Amarillo, and Cadillac Ranch was one of those stops for sure.
Okay. That concludes the 8 straight questions. I like to close by asking my guests to endorse something. So what's one thing you would like listeners to know about or to experience?
I think as I look at my time, at least professionally, and really trying to understand the community and how I can help as a leader in my community is I'd like to endorse Leadership Amarillo and Canyon.
Okay.
I was very fortunate that my employer allowed me to be a part of one of the classes a few years ago, and I love Lisa Blake and what she's doing for really developing those next level leaders in our community and opening up their eye to multiple industries, multiple needs and things in our community that you might not have known, even if you lived here your entire right. life. And I just think it's such a great leadership development program. And my hope is, I think anybody, if you have the opportunity, whether it's through your employer or just on your own, that is by far one of the best leadership development programs I've been able to do.
Okay. Megan Reed, thank you so much for being on the podcast. I appreciate it.
Thanks for having me.
And that concludes the episode. You can find out more about Megan's employer, Bell Helicopter, at bellflight.com. Thanks to Storybridge, to Pinnacle by Rock Rose, to Jimmy John's, and Panhandle Plains Historical Museum for supporting this podcast. Thanks also to Angelina Marie for editing the show. Thank you for listening. Hey Amarillo exists on a weekly basis because people listen to it, and I know they listen to it, and that always inspires me to put out a really cool product, which I hope it is cool. There are a lot of local people who support the show financially as well, and they do it through patreon.com/heyamarillo. Hey Amarillo's executive producers include Barbara and Jim Witten, Wes Reeves, Cindy Graham, Corey Burns, Josh Wood, Katie Linger, Patrick Burns, and Jason Burr. This has been episode 351. My name is Jason Boyette, and I'll see you next week.